Please join me in Job chapter number 19. We are at verse number 13, where Job is the one that's speaking. He's responding. And you know the situation. He is in dire straits. He's got a lot of physical problems going on right now, as well as having lost his family and his business recently. It's all because of Satan. It's true. It's at God's permission, but Job doesn't understand chapters 1 and 2. He's not aware of that. And so he has, in his response, has often thought that God is the one actively doing all these things to him, and he continues to say, why? Why is it happening? If God had only come and explained this to me, then we could get this worked out. And his associates, his so-called friends, keep harping on the fact that he must be a secret sinner, and all this is the rightful judgment of God. And so Job has to respond to that as well. So in this section of Job 19, starting at verse 13, Job is expressing how horrible his life is right now, how he is on the outs with many of the people that he used to be in good relationship with. And so this is what he says, Job 19, 13. He has put my brothers far from me. Now, the he that he's referenced there is God. From just before that, he was talking about how God seems to be the one doing this. Again, he's not correct in that, but we are understanding that Job is being emotional and expressing how he feels. And so God will take that into account when he finally does respond to Job. So he has put my brothers far from me. Those who knew me are wholly estranged from me. So he's feeling abandoned. He's feeling by himself, isolated. My relatives have failed me. My close friends have forgotten me. And I don't know if you've ever felt this situation in your own life where maybe things have gone wrong. And suddenly you find out who your true friends are because a lot of your acquaintances just kind of disappear. They slide off to the side. Well, Job is in that situation. Verse 15, the guests in my house, I'm thinking here he's talking about former guests, and my maidservants count me as a stranger. I have become a foreigner in their eyes. They don't know me. I call to my servant, but he gives me no answer. I must plead with him with my mouth for mercy. You can anticipate or expect that Job was a major employer before he lost everything. And so he had a really large household staff. And now he says, I call out to the guy that used to be at my beck and call, and he doesn't even talk to me. I have to beg him to help me out. Verse 17, it gets even more intimate, gets more close to home. My breath is strange to my wife. I'd almost go with the word weird. And I am a stench to the children of my own mother. So he smells funny. He's got a lot of health issues going on. And he's also, he's in depression. And so he's probably not taking good care of himself physically. So maybe his oral health at this moment is not the best in the world. So he's got halitosis. He's got bad breath. And he says, even my own wife can't stand my smell. Even young children despise me. When I rise, they talk against me. So even the little kids are saying nasty things to him. Now, where did they get that? They're getting it from their parents. You know the kids repeat what they've been hearing. And so the whole town, the whole area must be talking about Job and his secret sin and how he must be a horrible sinner because, remember, the functioning belief that these guys all have is bad things only happen to bad people. So Job must be really bad. Verse 19, all my intimate friends abhor me, and those whom I love have turned against me. How hard is that to know that the people you counted as your beloved are now your enemy? My bones stick to my skin and to my flesh, and I have escaped by the skin of my teeth. And so that's kind of the source for our modern day saying about I escaped by the skin of my teeth, meaning he barely is alive. But you couldn't tell that by looking at him. He is a skeleton and has lost all of that body fat that a healthy person would have, and has now lost a lot of the muscle mass. And then he says, have mercy on me. Have mercy on me. Oh, you, my friends, for the hand of God has touched me. Why do you, like God, pursue me? Why are you not satisfied with my flesh? So he is very emotional. And God kind of gives him a pass about this, and I think we need to also understand that that is the case. He says, God is the one doing this to me. Why are you guys just adding to it? Verse 23, oh, that my words were written. Oh, that they were inscribed in a book. Oh, that with an iron pen and lead they were engraved in the rock forever. That's what they would do if they had, if they wanted permanent posting, like some sort of monument. They would scratch it, engrave it in a rock, but they'd also have lead put in its place to highlight the carving. For I know that my Redeemer lives, and at the last he will stand upon the earth. This is one of those faith passages in the middle of Job's emotional outbursts. He says, all the things that have happened to me, all the grief that I'm feeling, all the pain and suffering that I'm going through, I wished it could be recorded for people to see it. But even in the midst of all this, this is something I won't back off of. I know that the one who will redeem me is alive. He's talking about God here. And that at the last, he is going to be standing on planet Earth. Now, Job is a prophet, and so somehow he's tapped into this understanding, maybe not a good understanding of it, but the idea that the Messiah, Jesus, will come and stand upon the earth. After my skin has been thus destroyed, so once it's all over with and I'm dead, yet in my flesh I shall see God, whom I shall see for myself, and my eyes shall behold, and not another. So he expresses not just simply a conviction that God himself is going to show up and redeem him, that he will be resurrected. He will be in his new body. This is definitely a passage of note revolving around Job being a prophet, because those are all New Testament concepts, that Jesus will rule and reign on new heaven, new earth. He will be on the same planet with all of us, and we will be resurrected or transformed. We will be with him in his eternal kingdom. We'll see him, as John writes in 1 John, we will see him just as he is. And that's why we will be just like him. Job then says, my heart faints within me. So even though he has the conviction, even though he has the faith about this ultimately being resolved, he still feels down and upset. Verse 28, if you say, how will we pursue him, and the root of the matter is found in him, be afraid of the sword, for wrath brings the punishment of the sword, that you may know there is a judgment. So here he thinks about some people. Remember, we saw that earlier in his comments. Some people are out to get him. Some people are kind of joining in on this get down on Job campaign that seems to be going on. And that he deserves it. He must be a secret sinner because all these bad things are happening from God in his life. And maybe we should also punish him like God is punishing him. But Job's response is, those of you thinking that, those of you engaging in that, you better understand that the Redeemer will be here one of these days. I will see him in my new body, and he will deal with those that have treated the righteous in such an unrighteous fashion. And so that's a direct warning to, I think, his so-called friends, his business associates, more than likely, that are accusing him of all these things. Chapter 20. Then Zophar the Naamathite answered and said. So Zophar is back in the picture. And his response this time is this. Therefore, my thoughts answer me. Because of my haste within me, I hear censure that insults me. And out of my understanding, a spirit answers me. So he says, hey, I can't keep quiet here when you are trying to turn the tables on us, trying to say that we're the bad guys in this story, which actually they are. They're the second tier of bad guys. Satan is the number one tier. He's the one that's really stirring the pot. But the three friends are definitely making unwarranted accusations against Job. And so when Job calls them on that, like he did in verse 29 of the previous chapter, Zophar takes umbrance at that. How dare you? Verse 4, do you not know this from of old, since man was placed on earth, that the exulting of the wicked is short, and the joy of the godless but for a moment? So bad guys don't last long. That's what he asserts. Though his height mount up to the heavens, and his head reach to the clouds, he will perish forever like his own dung. Those who have seen him will say, where'd he go? Where is he? He will fly away like a dream and not be found. He will be chased away like a vision in the night. Like, you know, like a dream just kind of dissipates when you wake up. The eye that saw him will see him no more, nor will his place any more behold him. His children will seek the favor of the poor, and his hands will give back his wealth. So basically, the guy is going to disappear from the scene. He'll no longer be prominent in the community, and his whole family will fall apart. His bones are full of his youthful vigor, but he will lie down with him in the dust. And so you already understand, again, Zophar is targeting Job with this, saying, you know what the rule is. The rule is bad guys don't get to keep living on planet Earth and enjoying all of their ill-gotten gain. God takes them out. And God takes out their family, he takes out their kids, which is exactly the situation Job is in. And so Zophar is making the same accusation we've heard before. Your kids deserve to die because you are a bad guy. Verse 12, though evil is sweet in his mouth, though he hides it under his tongue, though he is loath to let it go and holds it in his mouth, So, you know, bad guys seem to enjoy saying and planning bad things. Verse 14, yet his food is turned in his stomach. It is the venom of cobras within him. He swallows down riches, and then he vomits them up again. God casts them out of his belly. So judgment, that's the theme. Bad guys are eventually judged. Verse 16, he will suck the poison of cobras. The tongue of a viper will kill him. He will not look upon the rivers, the streams flowing with honey and curds. Now that's interesting. This is before Israel starts talking about going to a land that's flowing with milk and honey. But here it is in the story of Job as an expression of a country that is prosperous and very bountiful with natural things. You know, agriculture produces, you know, the honey of the bees as they're carrying out the pollination. But honey is also a reference to some of the sweeter fruits that get turned into some sort of high sugar liquid. And the curds, of course, thinking about the animals that are producing milk products that get turned into the cheese products. So he's saying, basically, bad guys don't get to stick around in prosperous regions for very long because God takes them down. He will give back the fruit of his toil and will not swallow it down. From the profit of his trading, he will get no enjoyment. That's because he'll be dead, basically. For he has crushed and abandoned the poor. He has seized a house that he did not build. So the reason God's judgment is coming is because he's been cheating other people. Now, they'll actually come right out and tell Job that he's guilty of very specific things along these lines in a little bit. But here, it's just being hinted at. It's being intimated. Job, I think some of your secret sins are that you have been crushing the poor. You've been seizing property that you have no right to have. Verse 20, because he knew no contentment in his belly, which is another way of saying he's greedy, he will not let anything in which he delights escape him. So he grabs everything. There was nothing left after he'd eaten. Again, that's a reference to being greedy. And therefore his prosperity will not endure, meaning God will judge him. In the fullness of his sufficiency, he will be in distress. The hand of everyone in misery will come against him. To fill his belly to the full, God will send his burning anger against him and rain it upon him into his body. So instead of him being filled with all of his unjust acquisitions, God is going to fill him up with judgment. Verse 24, he will flee from an iron weapon. A bronze arrow will strike him through. You might remember earlier, Job was using that sort of poetic description of how he felt was happening to him from God, that God was judging him, shooting him through with arrows. And here, this guy is basically saying, yeah, he is, because you deserve it. It is drawn forth and it comes out of his body. That glittering point comes out of his gallbladder. And so the gallbladder is toward the front of your body, just underneath your sternum, just a little bit to the right of center. And so the picture here is he's been shot in the back and out comes the head of the arrow from his front side because he deserved it. It is drawn forth, it comes out of his body, that glittering point comes out of his gallbladder, terrors come upon him. Utter darkness is laid up for his treasures. A fire not fanned will devour him. So just this burning, smoldering judgment on him. What is left in his tent will be consumed. The heavens will reveal his iniquity, and the earth will rise up against him. The possessions of his house will be carried away, dragged off in the day of God's wrath. So this guy is affirming, that's right, God is going to take you down. He has taken you down. He's taken your stuff. That's his wrath against you for your secret sin. Verse 29, he finishes up, this is the wicked man's portion from God, the heritage decreed for him by God. In other words, Job, you're getting what you deserve. Now, how would you like people to come in and, against all evidence to the contrary, accuse you of being such a rotten person that God is judging you by killing off your kids, taking away your businesses, taking away your employees, and taking away your health? How hard is this on poor Job? Verse 21, Job answered then and said, keep listening to my words. Let this be your comfort. Bear with me. I'm going to speak, and after I've spoken, you just go ahead and mock on. So he says, let me say something to you, and then you can go back to saying all this garbage that you've been saying against me. As for me, is my complaint against man? Why should I not be impatient? Look at me. Be appalled. Lay your hand over your mouth, meaning be so shocked you don't know what to say. So my problem is that I don't understand why God's doing this. And then he goes back to describing his situation. When I remember, I am dismayed, and shuddering seizes my flesh. Why do the wicked live, reach old age, grow mighty in power? So Job's reassessing, I think, some of his own assumptions. He may have been on the same page with his friends here at one point where he believed that bad things happen to bad people. Now, they believe bad things only happen to bad people. But here Job, again, because he's already mentioned this before, starts to express what reality is. And that is, sometimes only good things happen to bad people. So here he says, why? Why do the wicked get to live and get old and have lots of power and influence and stuff? Their offspring are established in their presence, their descendants before their eyes. So he's acknowledging something that all of us, I think, know to be true. Sometimes the bad guys do perfectly fine. God doesn't step in and judge them. Their bull breeds without fail. Excuse me, verse 9. Their houses are safe from fear. No rod of God is upon them. Their bull breeds without fail. Their cow calves, and it doesn't miscarry. They send out little boys like a flock. They're kids. You know, they got lots and lots of kids. And their children dance. They sing to the tambourine, the lyre. They rejoice to the sound of the pipe. So it's all happiness and joy and singing at the evil man's house. They sing to the tambourine and the lyre and rejoice in the sound of the pipe. They spend their names in their days in prosperity. And then in peace, meaning with nothing bad happening to them, they go down to Sheol. They die. Their spirit goes to the unseen place. They say to God, depart from us. We do not desire the knowledge of your ways. What is the Almighty that we should serve him? What profit do we get if we pray to him? This parallels something we'll see later. David in particular says this. A fool has said in his heart, there is no God. So a foolish person, morally foolish, doesn't believe that God is there and that God is going to call them to account. They deny that. And so that's exactly what you see here, is God doesn't have anything over me. Why should I do things God's way? What help would that get me in praying to Him and apologizing to Him when I've done something inappropriate according to these religious standards? Well, Job then says, "Behold, is not their prosperity in their hand? The counsel of the wicked is far from me." So Job now takes that information. Sometimes good things happen to bad people, and we know that. Well, guess what? I'm a good person, and yet bad things are happening to me. What's that all about? So the counsel of the wicked is far from me. I don't do and recommend bad things. So how often is it that the lamp of the wicked is put out, that their calamity comes upon them, that God distributes pains in His anger? So how often does it happen that God comes down hard on bad people, that they're like straw before the wind, that the chaff like the storm carries away? Job actually used that same idiomatic expression to talk about how he felt that God was coming after him like that. You say, God stores up their iniquity for their children. So the response that he's anticipating is, you're just going to tell me that God's just waiting to carry out his judgment against their kids. And Job's response to that idea is this, well, let him pay it to them that they may know it. Job's like, I don't want judgment to wait. I want the bad guys to get it in the neck now. And this, again, tells you he is feeling very emotional about this. Let their own eyes see their destruction. Let them drink of the wrath of the Almighty. For what do they care for their houses after them when the number of their months is cut off? So what good does it do to judge them in their kids when they're already gone?